Hi, good afternoon, everybody. This is Marva King. And again, we apologize for the delay, the five-minute delay. We have a full schedule today. And so we're going to get started. I'm going to introduce everybody to you because it'll take less time. If you're on our website, or if you have been on our website, everyone I'm going to introduce is up on our website. Their pictures and their bios are there. My name is Marva King. I am the I am the EPA grant lead. Could someone on the line please put their phone on mute so I can hear some static? That's the first thing you need to do is put your phone on mute. So because we got 160 people on this call and we don't want to hear the static. And if you do not have a mute button, you can hit star 6 to mute and pound 6 to unmute. So again, my name is Marva King and I am the CARE Program's grant team leader. I'm also your program coordinator. And I'll be facilitating this discussion. I also have Michelle Mandolia with me, who is the CARE team measurement and tracking lead. I have Jeannie Conklin with me, who is an acting director of our grant training division. And I have Dennis O'Connor, who a lot of you may have been emailing. He is in the RFP as the person to email questions to, and Dennis works on the CARE team as well. What we want to do today is quickly go over a PowerPoint presentation that tells you a little bit about the CARE program, and then the majority of the call would be a question and answer call. But before I do that, I want to remind you that please read your CARE request for proposals carefully. It will tell you exactly what you need. Please read your questions and answers document, which you will find next to the CARE proposal underneath that when you click on the CARE website. Because if you have a question, the chances are in the last 4 years it's been answered. And it's in the question and answer document. This is just to help you be more comfortable. Everything we're going to tell you today is written in a document. And that document you can access from our CARE webpage. So for those on the computer, we're going to go through the PowerPoint. For those on the phone, I hope you have downloaded the PowerPoint. And finally, I want to say something that has come up a number of times at our last webcast. People get a little concerned because we wouldn't answer specific questions about a specific project. And in our questions and answers, we repeatedly tell you that we cannot answer specific questions about a specific project. If you're going to do XYZ, can we do that with CARE? What we try to tell you, and we'll tell you throughout the day, is that you have to do the CARE process. And the CARE process for level one is identifying all the risks and prioritizing those risks and building a partnership. And for level two, it's to implement specific risks. So hypothetically, if you want to do lead and you haven't done and you're applying for a CARE level one, you can't do lead until you identify all your risks in that neighborhood. So I'll repeat that again, but we found that at our first webcast, we kept having to repeat that question, so I wanted to put that up front for you. And last of all, please remember to fill out your evaluations, which is on the CLUIN website. There's a form that you can fill out. All right, so we're going to get started on the PowerPoint. And the first page of the PowerPoint is a cover page. It just says CARE. The second page is titled, What is CARE? So what is CARE? CARE is a community-based, community-driven program created to build partnerships to help communities understand and reduce toxic risks from all sources. This is a demonstration project for EPA. It's the first of its kind. It's the way that we can put the money right where the rubber meets the road in the community. Second slide. Why CARE? Why do we form this program? It was to respond to all of your community requests for help. It was to develop a means to address concerns that are beyond the reach of national regulation. EPA regulates, but there's a lot of problems out there that don't fit in under that box. So CARE is outside of the box. It's to integrate our programs with your concerns to improve your the support in your communities. It's to help you mobilize new resources and use local knowledge to achieve results. You do that through your partnership. And it's to develop community consensus on sources of risk and risk reduction options. Next slide talks about our CARE goals. I'm not going to read them word for word. I ask you to please, if you haven't downloaded the PowerPoint, to do so you can see what the CARE goals are. They're actually in the RFP as well. And it's basically to reduce exposures, to help communities, to work with communities, and create a self-sustaining community-based partnership. Next slide is about CARE strategies. Again, these are in the RFP as well. It's to build effective collaborative partnerships. It's to provide information tools and technical assistance. It's to build consensus in communities on priorities for effective action to reduce risk. It's to focus on action. It's to facilitate networking among CARE communities. And it's to build long-term community capacity. At the end of the CARE grant, we want to make sure that you are set up to be a sustainable partnership, especially in a level two as a requirement. The next slide will show you that in our schematic we have, which says how CARE works. It has 4 points on that schematic, and the first 2 points join together and identify problems and solutions. That's what you have to do for a level one CARE grant. The second two, implement solutions, reduce risk, and become self-sustaining. That's what you have to do in a level two. We ask the level one to be thinking about self-sustaining as well, but it's a requirement of the level two. The next slide talks about how CARE creates change in EPA. This is not only a demonstration project that we're experimenting out in the communities, we're also doing the same thing here at in the agency. So what we've seen that's happening is that we're building strong Washington, D.C. headquarters support relationships with the regions, the 10 regions of EPA. We're building strong and unique organizational structure changes here. We operate on a matrix, which helps us to work across regular agency stovepipes. We see that we are changing the way the environmental programs are framed so that they see your project as a cumulative risk approach project. In other words, we're looking at multiple layers of risk in your community instead of just one risk. That's why we ask you to identify all your risk concerns in a level one. And we want to encourage a two-way communication between us and you. How CARE is funded. Our level ones, that are both level ones and level twos are nationally competitive, as you can see from the RFP. And in a level one category, we fund on an average of $90,000 for a level one, and on an average of $275,000 on a level two. Level ones can go up to $100,000, and level two can go up to $300,000. I was just telling you what the average award is. The next slide is a list of money that we've received so far in the CARE program and how that money has been used to award grants. We are basically a grant awarding program and a technical assistance program. So the bulk of our money goes to grants. Your technical assistance comes from EPA staff. Next slide, CARE is more than money. And that just tells you that's our technical assistance that we offer you. When you are awarded a CARE grant, a region CARE team is formed around your needs, your project needs. That regional team will provide expertise for you. They will help you understand, maneuver through the EPA voluntary programs. They'll help you with networking opportunities, and we all do shared learning but from headquarters to region and the community, and between community to community as well. CARE Tools is our next slide. CARE Tools for Communities, as we've been in existence since 2005, we have been fortunate enough to develop tools that you can use, and they're up on our web. And please look at those before you send in your proposal, because especially the CARE Resource Guide, which answer a lot of questions you may have about a particular media or environmental media, but especially the Community Guide to EPA's Voluntary Programs. We want you to understand what we have available at EPA so you can utilize in your CARE project, especially the roadmap. If you have not, if you don't understand that you need to write your level one in a certain type of process, the roadmap will take you through that process step by step in a 10-step method. And the grants guide will help you with sustainability. Next slide is a map where you can see where we have all 64 CARE community partnerships in across the nation right now. You will be our next round of 2009. You can also go up on our web to find a short description of each one of these projects. Last slide is your CARE contact slide. Those are our CARE co-chairs are listed there and their emails. And we have new co-chairs this year. We have Pat Perry is from the Solid Waste Office. Gail Bonanno is from the Water Office. And we also have a hotline number there, and that's our CARE website. We have a lot of stuff on that website. Please go to it. Again, I want to say that this meeting is for you. So we are a question and answer webinar. And I'm going to turn this over to the moderator, Michelle Mandolia, who will run through the questions and answers for you.
Hello, everyone. So how we like to run this portion of the webcast is to switch back and forth between the online submittals of questions and those with questions who would like to ask them over the phone line. And so I'll be switching back and forth. I also ask if you do ask a question over the phone line, if you just briefly identify yourself at the beginning. One thing we're going to do is try to only take questions from first-time askers until we run through all of those, and then we'll go back to repeat question askers, both over the Internet and over the phone. So I do want to start with the phone. Is there somebody on the line who has a question?
Yes, this is Teresa Burris at Radford University.
Yes, Teresa.
My concern is, I have read the RFP repeatedly, and I know that you all want all stakeholders at the table in this level one process. What if the suspected problem is the major industry in the area, and we know that we will never get them to the table? How do you suggest we handle that in our proposal?
You know, your problem is not unusual. We have run across that a lot. What we ask the level one, because you're our beginning CARE grant, is that you try to build your partnership as diverse as you can. If you cannot get that polluting industry in your partnership, at least give us a couple of lines on what you're trying to do to engage that person. And then, you could, for a business partner, you can go to, like, some of your small business people in your community, such as your auto body shops, your cleaners, your nail salons, or whatever. Because the reason why we say business has to be included because business lives and works in your community, too. So we want everyone who lives and works and plays in your community to be part of that partnership. So we understand that you may not be able to get that polluting person there in a level one. We just want to see that you've made an attempt or you have a process to do that eventually.
And so I'm assuming that the same thing will apply with those businesses, those small businesses like you listed, who are afraid to speak out because of ramifications.
Well, sometimes if you can't get a business, you can get a business association.
Okay.
Our Chamber of Commerce, Jeannie's saying. Yeah. So we just want to, yeah, a level one is not, we're not as strict with that as we are with a level two. A level two, we are asking for an actual business person.
Just one caution. Don't a priori decide who are the culprits and what the problems are. Remember, the level one process is about the community looking at all possible sources of toxics and not deciding beforehand that it's the big bad guy down the road.
Great. Okay, moving on to a question that we received over the Internet. This is from Susan in Blacksburg, Virginia. Is there a limit on the number of letters of support that can be submitted?
There is a limit on attachments in a level two, not in a level one. The RFP will tell you, and I would also encourage you to read the amendment to the RFP. But it will tell you on the second page of the amendment that a level two attachment limit is 50 total pages. So that so that includes everything, your notes, reports, your letters of support. There is no limit for a level one for attachments.
Great. Now, turning back to the phones, is there someone on the phone line who has a question?
Yes, I do.
Yes?
My name is Wendy Reed with Antelope Valley Conservancy. We're in northern Los Angeles County, southern Kern County, in a closed basin watershed. Our runoff, our surface water runoffs, are what are seriously a concern to us, and this is our proposed project. We feel that we have a very good stakeholder base and stakeholder participation at this time, but I'm a little bit concerned that we have not, readily identified that there's pollution in these ephemeral stream beds. But we know that we have a region-wide issue with illegal dumping, and so we're thinking that this care process might be a really good place for us to start. And I was hoping you could give me some feedback on that.
It's a good place to start if you're going to apply for a level one and you haven't identified all your risk yet. I mean, we expect you to do that as part of the process for level one. You don't have to have that done. So if you're thinking of applying for a level one and you're thinking about identifying all the risks in that watershed, the CARE Level One grant is a good one for you.
Thank you.
Great. So turning back to the computer, a question from Aaron in Cincinnati, Ohio. Can you explain the difference between environmental results and programmatic capacity?
Okay, you're talking about the requirements in the RFP for the evaluation, right? And so let me turn to that so I will not be speaking out of turn. Okay, so if you're looking for, I'm looking at the level one and measuring environmental results, they want to see a proposed plan for tracking and measuring expected environmental results. That might be, for a level one, that may be a little bit more difficult than a level two because you're not reducing risk. But some of those results for a level one would be how you identified your risk, how you prioritized your risk, and how you built your partnership. Those are some of the results. For programmatic capability, that is more about your past performance and what have you done successfully. What is your history as an organization? And what have you done? What is your experience and managing a project?
So it's the difference between, right, as Marva explained, what you are intending to achieve through this project and your, I guess, capacity to achieve that. If the question is a little bit about a level one, the care process is almost seen as a whole with the level twos achieving more of the environmental results. So in a level one, it is the steps you take towards getting to that level two process. At the same time, a lot of our level ones do decide to, in parallel, do achieve some environmental results where they are able to. There are some early wins. They find it's a way of engaging and exciting folks who are volunteering their time or the community members, bringing them to the table. So lots of times it might be an e-cycling event, perhaps a pharmaceutical waste, or even stream cleanups, just those steps that you can take and get people engaged.
Your second question, are the references part of the 13-page limit for level one? When you say references, wait a minute. When you say references, what is, I don't know what you're referring to. Are you referring to individual references?
This is Erin in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, I thought it was a, the same question. Erin, okay. Well, let me answer both. If you're referring to individual references, which we ask, that's a, you have to have a paragraph sketch in the 13-page limit about that person. If you're referring to resumes, they can be put in as attachments, so they're not part of the 13 pages.
Great. So now we'll take a question from someone on the phone.
Hi, this is Sarah Sharp from Fresno Metro Ministry in California.
Great.
And I just wanted to ask if we were to complete a research project as part of Level 1 or Level 2, is that going to become somehow property of EPA, or how does that work?
Yes. Anytime you do any project with federal taxpayers' dollars, the federal government reserves the right to use it for a federal purpose. We're not going to tread on your copyrights or your patents or anything, but we do reserve the right to use it for a federal purpose. So, yes, you'll have to send everything in to us, and we could use it for our own purpose if we needed.
Well, I mean, we would hope that you would use it, you know, the information that comes out of it. We would just, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's how it works.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Great. Turning back to the computer, I have a question from Julie in Golden, Colorado. Will the EPA Care Team technical assistance include fundraising?
No.
If so, in what capacity?
No.
No. Jeannie's saying, she's the director from the grants division. She's saying, no. And so what we do offer you is a guide on our website that talks about various different federal grants you can apply for. We do have a listserv that's called Care Connections. As we get things over the email, we forward those out to you. So we are a, we transfer information. It's up to you to take the initiative.
Yeah, you never use the word fundraising in a grant application. It's an unallowable cost.
Okay? No fundraising, no lobbying.
Absolutely, you got it.
Yeah, but on the positive note, one of the advantages of being part of the care community is you can suddenly start talking to other communities like yourselves and learn from each other.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of our care communities have foundations as their partners, so there is networking involved that you can make on your own, mentoring that you can pick up and work with other communities.
Great. So we'll turn to the phones again. Is there someone on the phone with a question?
Yes. This is Janet Liberman from the city of Roswell in Roswell, Georgia.
Yes.
Approximately how many applications do you get for level one and level two every year?
We have a total of, we got, on average, we've been getting a total of 130 applications a year. I don't know which is level ones and level twos, but that's on average in the past. I'm anticipating a little bit more this year because this is the first year we've had filled up webinars, which we've had this month. And
well,
so,
everybody needs money. So.
Yeah, and so I'm expecting a little bit more than 130.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, turning back to the computer, this is a question from Susan in Delaware, Ohio. Sorry, that threw me for a loop for a moment. Our community did the PACE-EH assessment in 1998 using NACHO guidance documents. Would we be able to submit a CARE grant to help us fund another PACE-EH assessment?
Yeah, if you need to, sure, you can do that. PACE-EH is not related to us at all, EPA. Most people who submit a grant that uses PACE-EH are usually submitting a level one to go through the assessment process. Level twos submit it, they document that they did a successful PACE-EH, and they document that as a process that they did that affirmed they did a level one. So that's up to you. That's your choice.
Okay, so turning back to the phones, do we have another question?
Yes, this is
Dana Osterbeck from Soundpoint, Alaska.
Okay.
I had a question about the when we were establishing the partnership. When we get the letters that support what we're writing, do you want, I'm not sure what you want them to say, because in the grant we want to establish partnerships, or when we get the letters of support, do you want them to say, like, yes, we support your project and we will help you in any way you can? And then in the grant, do you want us to explain how we did that, or?
First of all, you do not have to have letters of support. That those letters of support just affirms what you're doing. So in a level one, you're telling us about your partnership. You're telling us you've gathered X, Y, Z, and A, B, C, and they're going to be part of your partnership. To make you more competitive, usually, people submit letters of support. And basically what I've seen is that the letters of support say, I know about this project. I am willing to work with this project. And these are some things I'm willing to do.
Okay.
Okay?
Great. Okay, turning back to the computer, this is from Deanne in Elizabeth, New Jersey. We are a groundwork organization. We have already gathered many partners, including universities, local government, community groups, etc. We are looking to receive CARE funds in order to progress what we already have done. What types of programs are you looking for? We do many greening projects with community members. We do not know if we should apply for level one or level two.
Well, if you've already done your process of a level one, which looks like you have a sustainable partnership, I'm assuming you've already identified all your risks and prioritized your risks. If you've done that, you have to articulate that. You have to let us know that you've actually done all of those things, and then you can apply for level two. And your level two is related to the process you did for the level one. So in that level one, you identified risks, and you prioritized them, and you're going to work on reducing those risks. Say, for example, if you're talking about greening projects, green jobs or buildings or whatever, they would have to be a part of that list that you identified in the level one process and prioritized. And the prioritization has to meet with consensus of the partnership and with the community residents. So if you haven't done that, then you need to do a level one. If you've done that, you can apply for a level two. And you can include greening as part of those risks you're going to implement.
Okay, I'm going to take another question from the phone. And if the woman who tried to speak up at the same time as the woman from Alaska spoke up, I would love to take your question now. I'm sorry that we didn't take both last time.
Hi, this is Josie Sagwart from Worcester, Mass., not from Alaska.
Okay, great.
Sorry, I was waiting to see if she would speak up. We had a question that in the RFP, it looks like four level one CARE grant grantees have progressed and actually used the term graduated into a level two project. And we were curious about the lowness of that number. That seemed like not so many, and wondering what was behind that, if it just is because not many level ones apply for level two, or if it's because it's very competitive.
No, it was, first of all, you have to know that we're a new program, and so the first year, every year, we've awarded level two grants right off the bat who did not have level ones.
Okay.
So we didn't have a level one eligible to apply for level two until after 2 years within the grant process cycle. And so... So that's why you see a lower amount. You'll probably see more of that this year. And then also on top of that, there are some level ones who want to wait a little bit more longer than 2 years to apply for level two to complete the process.
And you'll see, I think, in the RFP some guidance, which we've added in the past couple years about thinking up front about the fact that the cycles, because of the way the cycles run, it's a two-year grant, but if you want to get a level two grant immediately after the level one, the application is actually only 18 months into that level one process. So a lot of folks have Some folks are ambitiously timing an 18-month process if they have had a head start to apply for level two, but others are choosing to wait out that 2 years plus six additional months. So you'll just see that there are some timing issues to consider.
And what Michelle is talking about is actually in the RFP, very, very early in the RFP, around near page 11 of the RFP, and it's where we have a lot of definitions about what is a community, how are these grants different from others, from other grant programs. And the last one is timing of care funding, and that's where you would look at it. It's number 14 under B, per section B.
But you were right. It is fairly difficult to get these grants, let's be honest about it, and you need to be thinking about that really from the onset. And just because you get a level one is not a guarantee that you get a level two.
Yes, that's exactly right. We've had someone who tried to get a level two and that were a level one, and they had to come back the next year and get a level two. And they did. They were successful, but they did not make it through the first time for a level two.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Josie. So turning back to the computer, Kimberly in Davis, California. First is, do citations count towards the 13-page limit? The answer is yes.
And before we get too lost in that, let's remember, we say 13 is the total. The one page is the cover page, 10 pages are the application, and 2 pages are the budget. That's how it's broken out.
And I just would be very careful with citations because we do have a limit on the font, which is 12 points. And I don't think anybody's going to read the citations anyway. So you need to be careful about that.
Okay. Kimberly of Davis, California also had, what does it mean that we are not allowed to survey more than 9 members of the public without prior approval by the Office of Management and Budget of the survey instrument? Can we have a survey of stakeholders as a performance measure?
Okay, because these are cooperative agreements, which means EPA will be substantially involved, you, the grantee, are going to have to live with the Paperwork Reduction Act. And basically what that says is that you're like a federal government in a sense. And so you can't put a burden, just as we are not allowed to put a burden on going out and surveying. So what you're caught in is the OMB requirement that applies to the federal government. So what you have to do is in your, we have other ways that will teach you if you get a grant where you can get what you need, but you are not allowed to ask the same questions of 9 or more people. You are in violation of the Paperwork Reduction Act.
And it takes forever, quite honestly,
yeah,
to get a clearance to do that.
Up to 2 years, I've seen.
So that's why we said just don't do it, because it wouldn't be within the life of the grant.
If you have other non-federal funding that you have access to, you can certainly survey people not using the grant money, and then you can use the support you receive from the federal government for any analysis of that data, which is often the more resource-intensive aspect.
And also we've seen in some of our projects that the partners are doing the survey without using the CARE funds.
Mm-hmm.
So that will help you to find a partner that could do that for you. Also, I just wanted to remind people of the questions and answers that are up on the website. And that particular question that you asked was right in the questions and answers. So please read them. I can't stress that enough. We try to keep those updated. We're going to update them again after this week of calls, and they'll be up there before the RFP closes, so you can read that again. Also, I want to remind people that there are archives from the from these webcasts, and there is an archive already up from the February 3rd seminar. So if you want to go back and listen, you can.
Okay. And then I guess Kimberly's last question in this one set of submissions was, where do we attach letters of support and curriculum guide? Who do you want a CV from? No conflict with the level two guideline that says up to 50 pages of attachments or part of it.
Level 2 can only have 50 pages of attachments, so you can't have more than that, number one. We don't care if you have letters of support or CVs. If you want them, fine. They can help you in a competitive process to people to look at. I would just advise you, we're reading probably over 150 applications. So the more you have, probably the less it's going to get read. So try to be as concise as possible.
Okay, turning back to the phones. Does someone on the phone have a question?
Yes, this is Laura Myers, and I'm calling from Worcester, Mass., but I'm talking about a project in Boston, the organization Healthcare Without Harm. And if an organization is, say, working with hospitals around this specific issue of pollutants and air quality and all that, and you're in an urban area like a Boston, how many partnered organizations would be required, because it could be limitless when you think of an urban area like Boston?
Well, you have to look at our definition of community. Because
I do.
Because Boston is not, we wouldn't consider Boston a community.
Right. I know. You said that you would take certain areas of the community, but I'm just thinking of the number of players in any area in an urban community.
Okay. So you look around, I don't know, a couple of zip codes or a zip code or whatever, and you're looking at who are the players and who could help you with your project. So that's up to you to look at that. Now, you said something, I think you said something about hospitals. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I hear you say something about hospitals? So
yes.
You don't just want to look at hospitals. You want to look at the people who are living and working and playing there. If you come to us with a project that you're just working around hospitals, it would be denied because that's not
that's not a community.
Huh?
Right. It's not a community.
Yeah. So I can't, so first of all, I can't give you an actual answer. I can't tell you, I can't give you an actual number. But I would just encourage you to look around who is going to be affected by the project you're talking about. That could be the neighborhood hospital. That could be the neighborhood church. That could be the neighborhood store. That could be the neighborhood school. And also make sure you have the neighborhood residents.
Right.
Okay?
Yep, got it. Thank you.
Okay, we're taking a question from Dendra in Michigan. In the level 2, should we list all the initial identified and the eventual participating partners?
For a level 2, you have to prove to us you have a concrete, sustainable partnership already. If you don't have that, don't apply for level 2. You're not going to meet that evaluation piece. If you have that, fine. If you want to tell us about some eventual partnerships, that's fine too. But the first cut is how diverse is your partnership that's already established. If you're holding meetings, if you're a regularly established partnership group.
Okay, turning back to the phone, do we have a question?
Yes.
Yes, this is Kendall. I'm from Brazos Valley Council of Governments in Bryan, Texas. Back to the definition of community, we want to include 7 counties in our region. Would that be considered a community?
Counties.
We've actually haven't had 7 counties included yet.
Oh, in Texas sometimes.
Yeah, we haven't had that yet. We had I'm just telling you, I mean, it's going to have to be decided by the selection person. They have, I mean, by the selection panel, we have a definition for community in our questions and answers as well as in our RFP. But I haven't seen something come through that got awarded for 7 counties. The most we've done is 3 counties. And that was in Northwest New Mexico. That project, if you want to look it up on our website, they looked at 3 counties.
They were a 2005 community.
And that's, Marty hits upon something really useful. Do take a look at the short abstracts on each of the existing 68, because it really gives you a sense of what were successful applications. And, you know, I think you can, for yourself, answer a lot of these questions by seeing who's done it and who's been chosen.
Yeah, we want to make sure that whatever community it is, it's small enough that you can do the work in it. And there's a lot of work that has to be done.
This is Tracy Beer from Seattle. Could you repeat what you said about where the successful project can be viewed?
On our basic care website, which is www.epa.gov/care, really our front page, there's a button that says, I think, your community profile.
Yes.
And they're sorted by fiscal year, are all of a description of all of the grants that have been awarded up to this point.
That's why I say, please go on our website. There's so much stuff there. And actually, some of those are seasoned projects have links to their own web pages, so you can learn a little bit more about that particular entity.
Some of them have final reports, and you can really see those are the graduates,
mm-hmm.
and they have final reports there. So I think there's a wealth of information, and seeing people who've been successful should help you when you're writing your proposal.
Thank you.
Okay, turning back to the computer, this is from Christina in Oregon. How do you gauge experience primary funding has been from other federal agencies, specifically Economic Development Administration and USDA Rural Development?
That's past performance.
Yeah. I mean, that's wonderful. how do we gauge it? I mean, please put it all in there, because that's going to give you additional points in that category.
And tell us what grant you had or your project officer's name so that, we could possibly talk to them in that.
And on a larger note, take a look at the evaluation criteria, which are in the RFA, which really give you an idea of what the point factors for various of these components are. I think if you start at page 29 in the RFA, it really lays out for both level 1 and level 2 evaluation criteria. That takes a lot of the mystery out of this.
Okay, turning back to the phone, do we have another question from a first-time questioner?
Yes. I'm Dale in Columbia, South Carolina.
That's Dale.
I think that you have, my reading is that you exclude brownfields sites from consideration on care grants. I think it's if they have a grant, but it's not just for brownfield sites in general, is it?
For a care grant, because we're a demonstration project, we had to be set up where we wouldn't duplicate efforts within EPA. And mm-hmm. the brownfields program is in EPA, so that's why mm-hmm. we do not, anything about a brownfields site should not be part of your care project.
Regardless of whether it has a grant.
Regardless of
a brownfields grant. Regardless of whether it has a brownfields grant.
You can state in your past performance that you've had a brownfields grant. Is that what you're asking?
No, I mean, if a site of concern that is contributing to these risks, if it's a brownfield site.
Was it identified?
Pardon?
Was it identified as a brownfield site?
Or are you identifying it as one?
Yeah. Suppose we were identifying it as one.
Okay. Then they're fine.
You're fine
yeah.
then.
You should know okay. that, and I have the summary of the stimulus package here, quite frankly, Brownfields has $100 million as part of the President's stimulus package. So
yes.
If you're really concerned about Brownfields, I would also urge you to look there.
Yes, but all that pretty much designated. It's going to grants that are already in the works, except for the job training grants. But if it has a grant from the Brownfields program, it's not eligible.
Right.
But if it's just a site that meets the definition of a Brownfields, then it could be considered.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can't do Brownfields work, though, because remember, you're doing risk determination. And so if you've already determined that your risk is your brownfields, you're not a level 1 or a level 2 probably.
Right. Yeah, you can't come in with a level 1 and say, I've identified my risk and it's brownfields. You have to
because level 1, you're identifying risk.
Right. Right. And so are you planning on doing a level 1 or a level 2?
Well,
because if you come in with a level two, you can't come in with a level two and say, I've identified brownfields as my risk, because we're going to say, go to the brownfields office and get a grant from them.
Okay.
So what you need to talk about is the problems within that community and that zip code. And without saying brownfields, quite frankly.
Okay.
Describe it.
Well, and you also need to identify all the risks, remember?
Right. In a level one, you have to identify all the risks. Yeah. And in a level two, you have to show us that you've identified all the risks.
Okay. Gotcha.
All right.
Well, one more follow-up question with a level two. How much physical work can you do to reduce the risk?
Yeah, and as much as you're able to for the money within the guidelines. And a lot of times,
it's not the money, it's the partnership and the extra help you get from your team that really helps you to do astonishing amounts of work with a small amount of money.
Right, and that's why we encourage you to read the final reports up on the website for the 2005, and you can see the work they've done with just a small amount of money. They leverage resources through the partnership.
Thank you.
Yeah, no limits. Thank you. Okay, this is back to the computer. This is from Paul in the Virgin Islands. In the Virgin Islands. And I'm sorry, the computer just refreshed. Where is it now? Okay, I note that for a level one grant, partners are identified as prospective partners. What level of commitment do we need at the proposal stage? Letters of interest? And do letters need to be included in the proposal package?
Okay, so we say prospective because the partnership is not firmed up yet, but so they can be prospective, or you can always already have them as partners. It's up to you, Paul. And so, like I said before earlier, you do not have to have letters of commitment. It just makes you more competitive if you do, and they are not included in the 13-page limit. They are included as an attachment.
Okay, turning back to the phone, do we have a question?
I have a follow-up question to that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I've already asked a question. This is Wendy Reed with Antelope Valley Conservancy. Because of our work with the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan process, I'm just wondering whether our already established partnerships and already established meeting schedule and such will actually work against us rather than for us under the grant criteria.
For what level grant?
For a level one, our feeling is that we do need to go back to level one in terms of these ephemeral streams, that they were not addressed in our IRWIMP project or our IRWIMP plan.
Okay, so you have an established partnership, but you haven't identified all your risks. And so
you want
to apply for a level one, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
That will not work against you. That will work in your favor.
And
thank you.
Remember, we're talking about risks across medium.
Yeah, not just water.
You can't just look at risks that are related to water. The RP says IG or EJ, I forget which one it says. It says air, water, land, waste.
Excellent.
Multiple risks.
Okay, so still on the phones, let me have us take a question from a first-time questioner over the phone. Okay, well, we have plenty over the computer, so I'll turn back to those. Julia in Salem, Massachusetts, we're concerned about how to narrow down environmental concerns for our Level 1 application. Our city has a history of significant pollution from tanneries, and there is a lot of sediment contamination and damage to local streams fisheries. However, most residents tend to think of the neighborhood coal power plant as a big problem in the neighborhood. How many types of environmental risks needs to be identified in a level one proposal, and what level of impact on residents' lives needs to be demonstrated?
Julia, I would encourage you to go on our website and look at the CARE roadmap that has a process for identifying the risk, because it's limitless. We want to see your process for identifying all the risks in your neighborhood. Do not restrict yourself, because what we want to see is a process that looks at everything and narrow it down through a prioritization consensus building process. So we want you to articulate that to us, and it will be a successful grant if you do that.
And this is really important because this, in fact, is one of the things that's really so different about CARE, that CARE doesn't just deal with water, air, soil, which are the classic ways that EPA approaches a problem. It's really a more integrated approach, and CARE is our way of carrying this forward. So understand that this is transformational for us as well as you, and bear with us.
And I would also add that when I say limitless, it does not have to just, when you're identifying your risk, it does not have to just be environmental risk. It could be social risk or economic risk as well.
Great. Okay. Just checking in with folks on the phone. Is there a first-time questioner who has a question?
Yes. This is Colin Newland in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And I've got a few questions for you, but I'll start with one. We have a client that well-defined geographic community. There are many different organizations, nonprofit and public as well as for-profit entities that have been collaborating around environmental risk issues for several years, and it's a real strength for them as an applicant. The first question I've got is, do they have, if they have never had just one plan, you know, that covers water issues, emissions, you know, everything under the sun that, that all these different collaboratives cover in different ways, shape, and form, if they don't have one single plan well established, does that mean that they should be looking at a level one application rather than a level two?
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask a second question?
Sure.
All right. This is the longer one, or it might be the longer one. I've gone to the Q&A, and I've been trying to find some guidelines on what the budget needs to, or what would be appropriate or not appropriate to include in a budget. And I see, you know, some of the guidelines from the OMB on what's ineligible, for instance, lobbying activities and that kind of thing. But are there some other comments or some examples, for instance, from other CARE grantees that you could use as to describe a difference between, for instance, spending money on staff who will, you know, lasso these partners, bring them together as collaborators, versus money that might be spent on equipment that might measure emissions or might measure water quality, some of those things that are more in the outcomes and impacts expenditures?
What you need to do is, before you do your budget, you need to do your work plan. You need to lay down exactly what you hope to achieve. And then you do your budget, and they should match up. The budget tells the story of the work plan and vice versa. Okay? And so if you were going to buy some type of equipment, which most level ones don't buy big equipment, but if for some reason, because it's not unallowable, you were, your work plan would tell the story of why you need that. So anybody that's reviewing this should be able to look at it and say clearly that this matches up. This is exactly why they need this amount of money. And guess what? Your budget does not have to come in exactly to the penny of what the ceiling is.
But just to digress for a moment, we don't expect people to be doing a lot of measuring as part of the CARE grant. The CARE grant is about using existing data sources, of which there are many, and not really spending a lot of money collecting data.
Okay, so turning back to the computer, this is a question from Luis in Maryland. And the question is, would an apartment building or a complex of apartments be defined as a community?
No. A community is where you live, work, and play. So it's where you live is the apartment building, but where is the people who work there? I mean, where's the small business people or the, I don't know, schools or whatever? And then if you have churches in your neighborhood, where are the churches? And so it cannot be contained in an apartment building. That's not community. And please, I'm sure the definition of community says something like that, but if it doesn't, it's probably in the Q&A somewhere.
Okay, turning back to the phone, do we have someone on the phone who has not yet asked a question who has one to ask now?
Yes, those are the definitions.
Okay. Okay, turning back to the computer. We have a question from Christina in Tennessee. Our project involves a community that is going through a serious environmental disaster, a coal ash spill, and there are many, many lawsuits. Will this impact EPA's participation in the project?
If you are awarded a CARE grant, we are your partner. We are your partner. You have a regional team that formed to assist you with your project description. Again, you have to follow the CARE process to get awarded, and that's looking at all the various as a level one, as you know, looking at all the risks, and as a level two, you have looked at those risks and are implementing some reduction. So it can't just be concentrated on coal ash. So
it's a question of lawsuits. Are lawsuits an issue? We won't get involved in the lawsuits.
We're going to be the partner.
You can identify more than just the coal ash spill.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can't use CARE funds as part of this litigation.
No.
Right.
That's another.
No lobby.
No
CARE funds for litigation or lobby or fundraising.
Okay, over the phones, is there someone who has not yet asked a question who has one to ask now? Okay, on the computer we have, is that someone with a question on the phone? Okay. On the computer, we have one from Paul in Texas. Is there a specific format for the grant proposal that EPA would like to see submitted, or can the applicant use a format of their choice as long as all of the evaluation criteria have been met?
You can use the format of your choice. Just remember, you have a page limit. So whatever format you use, you have a page limit. And again, I would ask you to look at the amendment that specifically states out that particular proposal submission information that talks about what's needed and what your page limit is.
You expect certain elements to be there.
Yes.
And where you put those is really your own discretion, but all those elements ought to be there.
And make sure it's clear and concise, because, like I said, we're gonna have a lot of applications, and you want us to be able to read yours thoroughly. So make sure it's clear and concise so that we can find what we're asking for.
Okay, on the phone, do we have a question?
Hello?
Yes?
Yes.
Yes, do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, please ask it.
Okay. How do you rate the communities that really need help or is not receiving the help that they need, especially when it comes to federal facilities?
How do we rate them?
Rate them so that they can be able to compete in a way that they can receive this help through this grant?
Yeah, and there are other. Our program, our CARE program, is a nationally competitive program. So I'm going to answer your question. Everything is on the same level. You compete with people who have a little bit more information or resources than you. That's what the CARE program is about. If it's an environmental justice concern, they have their own environmental justice small grants that rate differently, that evaluate differently than the CARE program. So the CARE program is competitively based on the RFP. So we don't take in consideration if you cannot meet the RFP. You have to meet what's required in the RFP to be a CARE grant. So we don't take that into consideration, the bottom line is. Not for the CARE program.
If you do meet what's in the RFP,
you'll be fine.
Well, if you do meet what's in the RFP, you're measured on the same level stick with everybody else. Same measuring stick. And in our selection panel, just so you be aware, we have a variety of people who have past experience in environmental justice and vulnerable populations and watershed populations and Native American populations. We have a very diverse group of people looking at these proposals.
Okay, turning back to the computer, this is from Greg in New Jersey. Would you explain the difference between a sub-award and use of commercial goods and services in a CARE project? Do I understand correctly that a sub-award can be made to a particular nonprofit partner chosen by the partnership while commercial goods and services needed for the project must be competitively acquired?
You're partially correct. Yes, you need to, commercial goods and services needed for the projects must be competitively acquired, and there's lots of really simple ways to do that. But a sub-award is a sub-grant. So you become like EPA, and you make grants to sub-awardees. And so you're going to have a little process where you compete those, and you're going to have to document it, and you're going to have to do just like we're doing, not as complicated, but you are going to have to be able to document and then get a signed agreement from your sub-awardee that, you know, they're responsible to you, and then you're responsible to us.
And I also will refer you back to the questions and answers because we have a question and answer on that as well.
Okay, turning back to the phone, is there someone who has not yet asked a question
on
the phone?
Yes. Tracy from West Virginia.
Yes.
My question is on level two funding, and I see it talks about implementation. I'm wondering if would funds be allowed for actual construction or actual tangible implementation?
Not construction, no. Our grants can't be used for that.
But, I mean, well, what about implementation of, say, an alternative wastewater treatment system to be used as a demonstration project?
We already have a grant program that does wastewater infrastructure. As a matter of fact, the stimulus funding is putting billions of dollars into that.
$4 billion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And with the amount of money you get from our grant, you would not be able to even do a plan. So it'd be very good
to perhaps the design work for that.
Design work is fundable under the wastewater treatment construction grant program.
Okay.
Okay.
And that's what it's called, wastewater treatment construction grant program.
Right. So you would, that's like what the stimulus funding is going to be doing.
Okay.
Okay. Turning back to the computer, we have a question from John in Hawaii. And the question is, over the past year, the Maui Soil and Water Conservation District has been working on a watershed-based plan that follows the EPA's 9 elements of watershed planning to be eligible for Section 319 funding. Much of the work that we have completed seems to address some of the aspects of Level 1. Would applying for Level 1 CARE grant affect the possibility of receiving the 319 funding? Can CARE and 319 funds be used to address the same community and community concerns?
Well, applying for a CARE grant will not affect the 319 funding, but your CARE grant has to be more than just water. So I guess you could apply for a CARE grant identifying all your risks, and the 319 funding could be just based on one of the risks, which is water, so you could work it that way.
So the answer is that you would start with a level one process, even though the process you've gone through for the watershed seems like a level one process. It's only been focused on water.
Right.
Okay. So are there any questions on the phone now from people who have not yet asked a question?
Hi. Yeah. This is Adam Cutler at the Public Interest Law Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
We were wondering whether the procedures are different in any appreciable way if you're applying or you're making your proposal with co-applicants. In this case, we would be kind of the lead applicant and the partnership, which already exists but doesn't really have any administrative capabilities right now, we're kind of envisioning as a co-applicant. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe speak to any differences in the process that might result from that.
Are you a fiscal agent?
I'm sorry?
Are you a fiscal agent for grantees? Or are you going to be actually, because we only have one grantee, okay? Someone comes in and they're responsible, whoever signed off on the application. And in CARE, you could have many, many partners in that, but you're going to be rated on you as how you manage this partnership, and in the end, you're responsible for the project.
No, the fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah.
Right, and that's, I think, how we would approach it. I mean, we've run grants before in other contexts. Our organization has run grants before in other contexts, and I think that's how we would approach it here.
But there's no difference in how you apply for it. But of course you would, if you don't have, you know, you just would compete as you've always competed. We don't make any distinction. We just hold the winner of the grant fiscally and programmatically responsible for the work.
So the bottom line is no co-applicant. Someone can be a partner with you as the applicant.
I see. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Great. Turning back to the computer, we have a question from Nicole in Washington State. Within the proposal, do we need to identify individuals by name, e.g. John Smith, who will be involved in the CARE community group, or can we define them generically as a member of a specific faction of the community, e.g. dairy producer? For example, we will have 6 dairy producers in the group. Yeah.
You can do either or, either anything you want with that. We do look, because I'm on a selection panel, we do look to make sure that there's a resident community involved, but we're not looking to see if Joe Blow is in that resident community.
We won't call them up.
Yeah. So, you know, we're trusting you. If we find that later, we'll come back to you. But, so you don't have to list every single person, just your entity.
Okay. On the phones, do we have someone who has not yet asked a question? Okay. On the computer, we have a question from Paula. We are a university group that is part of a community consortium in Connecticut that is exploring a CARE grant level one proposal. If the project is funded, we would be providing technical support. Would the lead agency have to use competitive bidding to involve us and compensate us?
Yes, they would. EPA takes this very seriously. Even if someone helps you write the proposal or you write a proposal for someone, that does not mean that you're going to get to be involved in that grant. We need you to be competitively selected.
Okay. Do we have any questions over the phone of someone who has not yet? Okay.
And I apologize if this has been answered again. I just need a little bit more clarification. I know on the funding for the phase one, it's around $90,000. How did the in-kind and the other contributions have to match up? I wasn't quite clear on that.
We don't ask for matching funds or in-kind for our grant. And we really advise you not even to put it down there, because if you put it down there and it's awarded with that down there, you're going to be accountable for it.
Okay. Thank you.
You can talk about it after you get the award in your progress review.
Okay. Thank you. Great. So we do have a question over the computer from Tracy in Arkansas. Is the work plan a part of the 13-page limit? Is it considered an attachment? Is it considered part of the 2-page budget?
The work plan is a part of the 13-page limit. It is usually up to 10 pages. The first page is a title page, then the work plan, which is 10 pages, and then the 2-page budget.
And I'm so sorry, that was Tracy from Alaska. My apologies. I'm speaking too quickly here.
And if you read the amendment, that spells it out there, so please go online, look at the amendment, look at the question and answer document.
Okay, this is, do we have any questions over the phone from first-time askers?
This is Rose Morgan from Newton County Soil and Water. If we run into any other questions, is it possible that we can call and get that information, or is today the only day we can get it?
You should email Dennis O'Connor, who is listed as the contact in the RFP.
And actually, email is probably preferable
to
a phone call.
Sure.
And the email is O'Connor, O-C-O-N-N-O-R, dot Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at EPA.gov.
I forgot to tell all of you that there is an online tutorial that was developed just for the CARE grant. And you can reach that from our website, the CARE website. You can also reach it directly from the EPA Region 7 page. And their page is www.epa.gov/region07. And, of course, our website is www.epa.gov/CARE. And it's a hot button on the CARE page. And that online tutorial will help you walk through the CARE RFP process. I did it, and it was pretty cool.
And before we leave, since there isn't too much time, I want to take a moment just to remind people, register now for grants.gov. If you wait till the last minute to register, they may not process your registration in time. So those of you using grants.gov, make sure you do it soon enough and a person is going to be there for the whole process.
Yeah, and also get a DUNS number and also register in CCR. And all that, if you go to grants.gov, it'll walk you through it.
Okay. Question from the computer. Ned in South Carolina, you have said we should use existing data sources to identify risks. We have budgeted for home test kits for lead, radon, and other risks as part of our community education aspects as well as risk identification. Is that expenditure allowed or should we find other sources of house, of funding or for household risk identification?
Yeah, it's fine. It's allowed. Just make sure that's not all you're doing in a level one, though, because if that's all you're doing, it won't be competitive. You won't get the grant. You're not doing the whole process. But that's fine.
Okay, over the phone, anyone who hasn't asked a question? Okay, over the computer, Heather from Kentucky. There is a Superfund site in the community, a dump that was closed 20 years ago. Issues still exist concerning toxins and contaminants coming from the site and affecting community residents. Are Superfund sites allowable as part of the community's environmental concerns?
No, we cannot use the Superfund information or project or anything. It's just the same as we had the conversation about brownfields. We can't utilize that because we're a demonstration project. We can't duplicate efforts that's already going on in EPA.
Okay. I think that worked there really quickly. Okay. We have a question over the computer from Kimberly in California. Oh, I'm sorry. We already did take questions from her. Okay. Over the phone, anyone who has asked a question previously who has another question, we'll take it now.
Hi, this is Sarah Sharp, again from Fresno Metro Ministry. We have been working in partnership with a group of people who are all throughout an air basin, and it's various counties involved, but we also are interested in water issues. We really want to look at cumulative impacts in our communities, in the environmental justice communities throughout our valley. And it's not clear in the definition of community that I'm looking at in the RFP. If that area is too large. We are in the San Joaquin Valley in California, which is a pretty large valley, but we still consider it to be the same environment. We all breathe the same air and have similar water issues.
You know, that question in the Q&A is meant to be guidance. Really, it comes down to your making a judgment call and a case for what you would define as a community and the area that you would want to address through the grant.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't have a more specific answer than that. Okay. So we have a question on the computer from Julie in Colorado. Since Level 2s are existing organizations and partnerships, are granted funds applicable for increasing operations?
Well, don't understand the question.
I think if the question is just sort of increasing an existing
partnership,
an existing effort, then yes, meets all the criteria.
Yeah. It's not to grow your organization, though, to turn it into a bigger nonprofit or whatever.
Right.
It's for a project.
That partnership is helping you do your project. Yeah. And
okay. Taking a question over the phone from someone who may have previously asked a question.
Is funding allowed for personnel expenses, like to hire someone?
Yes. That's allowable.
Yes. We do look at your budget, though. As Jenny says, make sure your budget is applicable to your project description. And what is that person doing? Is that person is helping you identify the risk? You have to be explicit. You have to tell us what that person's doing.
How about administrative costs?
Do you have indirect costs, right?
Right.
Okay, yes, you're allowed to submit those in your budget. This is why it's first.
Okay, we have a question from Dendra, another question. We've been engaged in a level one type activity for a year and are ready for a level two. I understand a level one is not mandatory for applying for a level two. That is the case.
Just be very clear in your narrative, the level one process that you went through. So it's very clear to us that you have done the process as defined in the RFP.
What I suggest to people is look at the evaluation criteria for a level one, see how you'd fare against it.
Okay, I will take a question over the phone from someone who's previously asked.
I have a follow-up question. This is Wendy Reed.
Yeah.
One of the things that you had pointed out in an earlier question asked was that this grant aims to cover air, water, and land risks, not just water risks. Looking through the already approved grantees of prior projects in other communities, I see that there are several that have dealt, as we wish to, with our streambed network. And that while there is, you know, the issues of land pollution, of dumping, and the potential that some of those things dumped may have, you know, chemicals that then proceed through the air, how strong of an air pollution component do we really need to include in our proposal when we're focusing on a streambed network?
We just need to know if you are talking about applying for a level two, you feel you've already gone through the level one process, we need to see that everything was considered. And then if you've developed a priority list and at the top of that list are primarily water concerns, that's completely acceptable. But we're just saying all risks through this process, the CARE process, all risks from all media should need to be considered.
Okay, no, we're looking at a level one. We're the ones that had already done the IRWIMP, the regional water management planning process. But it really did not consider the land issues, and it didn't consider the ephemeral stream beds and their overall. We have economic impacts. We have all kinds of impacts, but I'm not sure that air pollution, you know, is something that we'll be able to tie in, and I'm just wondering if that's critical. I mean, if I look at the one that's here, I think it's Oahu. It's in Hawaii of already approved grants. I mean, theirs is strictly water. It's the stream beds.
No, they're going through a level one process. So what they're going to focus on has not yet been identified.
Okay, so the fact that we're focusing, though, on the stream beds as the area that we're targeting for our studies and our stakeholder feedback and information gathering, that's still acceptable to you?
Yes, as long as the community includes the local businesses, the affected residents, and in that process, you're looking at all of the concerns in the area.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I will take a question from the computer, which is from Erin. It's a follow-up from an earlier question she asked. And she's saying, let me be more clear, past performance under that section, I think this is a question about environmental results and programmatic capacity from before. Past performance, A and B look very similar. Marva?
Yeah, if you take it from the amendment, which talks about it under past performance, A is programmatic capability. And it talks about submitting a list of your assistant agreements similar in scope and relevant to the proposed project. And B is environmental results that your organization performed in the last 3 years and how you documented that and how you reported that and the progress you made. So I think B is a little more broader than A. A is based on relating to this project scope that you're talking about now, and B is related on a broader work that you've been doing as an organization.
Okay.
That's how I read it. Is that what you... But,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, any questions over the phone then? Okay.
Hello.
Yes?
Hi, this is Cecilia Chakin. Cecilia Chenrock in Alaska, and I have a question.
Yeah.
We're currently on the level one grant.
Yeah.
And we're actually having a CARE conference here with the elders from all the seven villages.
Yeah.
And well, since they don't can't write in English, is is it possible to do a, well, we're doing a petition for them where we all work together to identify all the risks and concerns and all the toxics. So we're putting that down into a petition for all the elders to sign. And we're also doing a footage of it, a camcorder. So is that acceptable also?
So you're saying that what you're thinking about is your process for a level one, and is that what you're saying?
They're a level one right now. You're talking about, can you submit, I'm assuming, their original petition and then maybe a translation of what they are signing, and then also a tape you want to submit?
Yes, it's we're all in a Yupika Nation, and
yeah.
we're teaching about all the toxic and concerns, and prior we actually went up to like 28 issues and concerns facing all the villages. We all got together, and we got together with all the elders, and we talked about those, and they prioritized them, and. So we're taking those priorities, and we're gonna bring it out to our communities. So we currently got like some villages here to talk about that. So I'm gonna be doing a presentation on that for support.
Okay.
So it's all gonna be a petition, also in Yupik for the elders to understand.
Okay. Yeah, so you can submit that as an attachment if that's what you're asking. Yeah.
But
it has to be in English.
Yes.
Yeah. And just to be clear, you still have that page limit that's in English for the work plan, which is no more than 13 pages. That includes the budget and the title page. So you have that page limit. It has to be in English. Now, if you submit an attachment that's a video, I don't know if
yeah, we hadn't thought about that.
I don't know if everybody is going to be able to review that.
It shows our tradition. It shows our traditions and our lifestyles here in Tuksuk. It's really different than from the big places versus the remote place in Alaska.
You're absolutely
able
to look at.
Okay, so if you're going to submit a DVD, don't just send us one, because we've got to send it out to others. And see, that's going to be the challenge, like Dennis says, for us to look at it.
Are you going
to
put it onto a CD?
I can, yes.
That'd be the better way, and then we could copy it.
Yes, you can submit. It would be wonderful if you could submit it by CD, because a DVD, then we could copy it and send it.
I guess that means you can't do grants.gov.
No,
she's going to have to send it in by courier to us. And send us more than one copy, because we have to send it to the region. We have to look at it here in headquarters, okay?
And understand it won't be returned.
We ask for three copies.
Okay. May I add something to this and ask a question directly related to that?
Well, let me ask the person from Alaska, are they finished with us? Did you understand our response?
I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay.
And
my question is, could they go ahead and have their video posted on a website, and would you then access that website?
No. Rather than
sending media in the mail and duplicating it all?
No, we can't do that.
Okay.
It has to become as part of their proposal.
So I'm noticing we only have 3 minutes left and far more questions than we can answer. So I would like to ask Marva about the follow-up process for getting these questions answered.
We will answer them in the Q&A. We'll have to take them and answer them in the Q&As and list them on our website. We will revise the question and answer document that's currently on the EPA website that's underneath the RFP and underneath the amendment. There's a question and answer document that's currently now dated February 18th. And so we will take these questions that are on the web and answer them and put them as part of the question and answer document. So again, please make sure you go on the web and get that document.
And so apologies to everyone that we couldn't get through all the questions, but we were at least able to get through one question from every questioner. So please do look for that revised Q&A. Is that a question for me?
And also, okay. The archives are up now from the February 3rd call, and they'll be up soon from this call.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.